Hour number two, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking some Titans. And look, it's been no secret so far. We've talked about it a lot here on the show. Defensively, it's been a struggle so far this year. But I think the weird part, Joe, it's been a struggle for a couple of guys that I'm used to seeing play pretty well normally, and that is Kevin Byard and Jayon Brown. It just doesn't seem to me, and feel free to disagree if you want, that they're having the same impact that I normally see from those two. And Kevin Byard in particular, it just doesn't look like he's taking the right angles in the running game on defense. He's been burned a few times, over the middle. He doesn't look like the typical all-pro caliber safety that we're seeing from Kevin Byard. Now, I guess my next question is, how much of that is Kevin Byard and how much of that is what's going on in front of him with the pass rush not getting there, the run defense not stopping them at the line of scrimmage? How much of that do you have to factor in? I'm sure that's a big portion of it. But it just doesn't seem to me like Kevin Byard and Jayon Brown are having the type of years that we're used to seeing from them.
Yeah, I would agree with Byard. I think that's a great question. Yeah, we've seen some big running plays they've given up where he's taking bad angles. I think in the last game, and I want to say this is Pro Football Focus stat, but I think he gave up, he was in coverage, 6 targets, gave up 6 completions. I know he gave up a TD pass a little bit late to arrive on that. And, yeah, he just has not had – he's actually had a chance, too, to make a couple picks that he – and usually he gobbles those up. So I do think that – it has to be at least somewhat related to what's going on in front of them and having to compensate for things. I mean, look, it's just an easier job if the guys in front of you are taking care of their stuff and they're setting the edge and you're not having to take an angle on a 30-yard run, I think that's got to be part of it. And Jayon Brown, I hadn't thought of that till you brought it up here, but yeah, to me, I guess it's just we haven't seen him as much. Right, we just haven't seen him make as many plays as we're used to him making. So it's probably all part of the collective right now of this defense struggling to put it together. But those are two guys who, again, that's why I look at this defense and I can't buy that they're going to be this crappy all year. We know they can play, and we know that. Rashawn Evans. I thought Rashawn Evans in the last game had some moments of,
he's pretty good at the goal line stand.
Yeah,
my goodness.
Some run-stopping situations from him. But even, for Rashawn Evans in some of these big plays, he's also been out of position or, missed a tackle or whatever the case may be. I mean, a lot of these guys haven't played their best. But, again, there's so many of them who we have seen it that I can't buy that it's going to stay like this. I don't know how good it can get, but – I know it can get better than this.
So we mentioned to open the show, Adoree' Jackson back at practice now. He is designated to return off of the IR list. The Titans have 3 weeks to do that, but they can activate him at any time. And Joe, you were at practice yesterday. Adoree' Jackson looking pretty good. I guess there's a decent chance he could play on Sunday against Pittsburgh. If that's the case, and he's back, are we maybe overhyping how much of a difference he can make? Do you believe that could be a gigantic difference for this defense? Where do you fall in line with how impactful Adoree' Jackson could be, not only to him and just that side of the field being covered, but the entire defense as a whole, maybe helping out guys like Kevin Byard and Jayon Brown?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll make a big difference. Now, I've always believed this, always will. Take the greatest defensive backs in the history of football in their prime, make them part of a fantasy defensive backfield, and then put them on a defense with no pass rush, and they'll get beat. That's still the biggest problem is the guys who are supposed to be providing pressure aren't doing it enough, and so some of these big plays are given up, or even just 3rd and 8s, 3rd and 6s, 3rd and 11s are giving up, are because the quarterbacks are not affected at all. So that's Adoree' Jackson isn't fixing that. That's still the number one thing to fix. But, yeah, he's going to help for sure. Just you can – in a certain matchup, you can just say, okay, Adoree' is on this guy. You can match up man-to-man with people better when you want to play man. And he's fast. He's a playmaker. They've obviously – you think about what they've looked like there. I mean, they've had various guys in and out. Malcolm Butler's been there all year. And, you know, Malcolm Butler is one of those. He's kind of a polarizing player, too. You know, he gets beat and stuff. I mean, I will contend. I mean, no one is with the Titans going to exactly break down what happened. But the TD to Fuller, I'm not just going to put on Butler. That was some kind of a mix-up. Yeah. Had to have been. But Butler gets beat. And he got beat by Justin Jefferson a lot. But I tell you what, he also makes plays, and he is solid. He's a solid cornerback. He's not great. He's not dominant. But I'd take him on my team. So you add Jackson to that, and then you hope that Christian Fulton comes out. And Christian Fulton didn't have a good week last week. But I think those three, you move forward with that, and you feel like, okay, that could grow into a pretty good trio, and you're in that look a lot on defense.
Now, I said this heading into this season, and I think it's unfair to expect this in his first week back, whether that's this week against Pittsburgh, whether it's next week, whatever the case may be. I still think there's another level that Adoree Jackson can get to. I think the Titans have been waiting on that. And you know, look, you know, he was drafted in the first round, and part of the reason he was drafted in the first round was because of his abilities as a return man. That's probably not going to happen at this point. I think Khalif Raymond's doing a nice job back there on punt return. I mean, there hasn't been any abject disasters back there yet, which, quite frankly, that's a step up from what we've seen the last two or three years back there. So I feel good about that. But I think just purely as a cornerback, there's another level for Adoree Jackson to get to. I think he's physically talented enough to get there and be one of the top, I don't know, 10 cornerbacks in the league from a physical standpoint. He hasn't gotten there yet on a consistent basis. Again, I think it's unfair to expect that in the first game, but at some point this year, I want to see some signs that he's trending in that direction.
Yeah, Adoree is I think if Adoree had like Butler's mindset, probably be a better player. I think there's good and bad with, you know, if you forget about things and can wipe them from your memory and move on to the next play, that's a huge part of playing cornerback at this level of football or college football. And he absolutely has that. You know, he you don't see him get affected play to play. You know, the intensity level and things like that, he's not that kind of dogged competitor that Butler is, not outwardly anyway. And, you know, you got guys like Byard, who is just an absolute football junkie, who kind of sets that standard. And Logan Ryan was that kind of guy too. Adoree Jackson, probably the most talented of all of them. So is there another level he can reach? I agree. I think there is. Will he reach it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's going to be the question as they move forward here. And then as this season continues to grow, I think sometimes in sports, and this happens in the NFL, this happens a lot in hockey as well, you see what rookies are at the beginning of the year, and you just think, okay, well, that's what they're going to be all season long. There's a lot of improvement, I think, that takes place. Look, Christian Fulton's got a long way to go. I thought he had a rough game on Sunday against Houston. Have you seen any signs from him that at the end of either this season or as they move forward here the next year or two in the future, he's going to be a pretty good player for them in the secondary? I think the biggest thing that jumps out to me, obviously, is his running ability. I mean, he can just fly back there. And that, coupled with Adoree Jackson, the Titans, if he's able to return this week, should be in a much better position from that standpoint, the speed in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, look, think about Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry was well into his third year before it all came together for him. So you're right. We do that way too much in this league where you get a glimpse of someone or you get six games of someone and that's what they are. That doesn't have to be what they are at all. And I do think Christian Fulton can be a good player this year for this team. Like you said, he runs well. He competes. It looks like at times maybe he's not totally sure about what's going on. I think that has happened some with this defense, and I don't know whose fault that is, but you know, that's got to get figured out from the top down, from the coaching down. And I think he's a guy who's going to probably grow and play better. I mean, like Jonathan Joseph has been out there a lot, and he's a veteran, and he's a guy that knows what he's doing out there. But at times, it's just his struggles to run have just been exposed, and teams have taken advantage of it. So they need Christian Fulton to grow into that role, and I think he'll have every opportunity. Chris Jackson was ahead of him now early, remember. Now, also, Fulton was banged up some in camp, so that was part of that. But, yeah, he's second-round pick. for a reason, and there's no reason right now to think he has to be stagnant and not get better. I mean, I think he will.
So you mentioned the last couple of weeks with the pass rush. Obviously, that's going to be the thing we continue to watch the closest on defense. You know, the last 2 weeks they've gone up against Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, both guys who move around. They're hard to bring down, and they can create plays with their feet. Now, Ben Roethlisberger is still very hard to bring down, but he's not going to be running away from you or anything like that. You know exactly where he's going to be in the pocket. Does that help the Titans this week in terms of maybe getting home and finishing on a couple of more sacks?
Yeah, you would think. There were a couple plays last week where if Clowney is in that exact same position Sunday, he will at least hit Roethlisberger, you know, if not sack him. You know, just a couple plays where it's like, you're not going to get Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, that would help. Now, Roethlisberger, yeah, he's big and strong still. He's, you know, savvy, gets the ball out. It's not going to be easy, but at least if they do have a blitz that's effective, they don't have to worry about, like, with Josh Allen and Watson leaking out of that and making a play. That Roethlisberger used to do that stuff, but he's not quite that guy anymore.
When we come back, we'll dive into some college football. It was a bad day yesterday for the reigning national champions in the SEC. We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking some college football. And Joe, bad day yesterday for the LSU Tigers. LSU self-imposing some penalties for rules violations. Basically, they docked themselves, I think, 8 football scholarships over a 2-year period. They reduced recruiting visits, evaluations, and communication. After a 2-year investigation that uncovered booster payments to the father of a former football player, also Odell Beckham Jr., getting a ban for LSU for basically 2 years. I think back to the national championship game against Clemson.
Let him have some fun.
He just threw out the cash. I think he threw $2,000 worth of $100 bills after that game against Clemson. Just not a good day yesterday.
Whatever.
Odell Beckham, by the way.
Yeah, Beckham, interesting day. What did he say? Like COVID, if it's not
it's a mutual respect.
Yeah, mutual respect. That's body. Why COVID's not in his body. It's a mutual respect.
Like, okay, buddy.
COVID, go away. Okay, sounds good. I loved him throwing the cash around. Who cares? $20 million locker room. You can't throw a couple hundreds out of some guys? Come on. These college kids can't go out and, you know, get a burger?
A lot of them were players that are in the NFL right now.
It's just dumb.
Like Joe Burrow and Justin Jefferson, you know, Grant Delpit. Well, he's still there, but yeah, I mean,
he'll be paid soon enough. Yeah, but well, so the no show job's a big thing here, right? That was the kid's dad had a no show job. It's typical stuff. It's also amazing. LSU is doing this, and like Will Wade's like, keep on trucking,
keep going, baby.
There's nothing wrong going on over there.
Well,
Will Wade, here we go.
What this is from LSU is, hey, we're going to self-impose these things, so hopefully the NCAA doesn't just come back and hammer us. Like, hey, here's what we're doing to put some discipline on ourselves, so please don't do anything more to us.
Right.
That's what this is.
Right, trying to avoid a postseason ban. So what is it, 8 scholarships, I think?
Yes, over 2 years.
Some scholarship reductions, trying to avoid that postseason ban. Like the Beckham thing.
You're not going to have to worry about the postseason ban this year.
Well, that's right.
And defense can't stop anyone.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, a postseason ban, like, not even a bowl game.
Well, I mean.
There's still people still want to play in a bowl game.
I suppose.
Yeah, you know, I mean, right. It's not just, I mean, shoot, the playoff 4 teams, man. If that's all we care about in this sport, then there's not much, you know, why do we talk about it at all? I mean, That's the one thing that's annoying about college football with this playoff. But the Beckham stuff should not mean anything. Why is it their fault that he did that, you know? He's throwing – what are you going to do? I mean, yeah, keep him away, I guess.
May not be a bad idea to keep him off the sideline.
Yeah.
Stay away for a little bit there, buddy.
But I look forward to the day when, like, people can do that and no one gives a crap because they shouldn't give a crap anyway, you know? And that's coming. It's just not here now. But the fact that it's coming, I would think, would kind of soften some of this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would think so. The no-show job stuff, I mean, that's like classic SEC. You know, and again, not just SEC. I mean,
it's kind of a crazy story, though, because apparently, like, the father of this former player, I think the player was Vadel Anderson.
Yeah.
And his father received $180,000 of stolen money from an LSU booster who had admitted to embezzling more than $500,000 from a hospital.
It's good. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's an interesting way to hide money.
Yeah, embezzling money from a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Real nice, yeah.
Yeah.
See, now there's so there is the person who needs to get punished, right? See? So what we have in college sports is like you have like actual criminal behavior. So I'll take this to the Jerry Sandusky thing at Penn State. I've been in screaming arguments about this. The whole thing with that was I want those people to go to prison. These are serious crimes, and I think it's insulting to the victims of Jerry Sandusky to say, Penn State, you're going to have probation and lose some scholarships. Like
it's a football thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Like it's a criminal thing, you know? So that is disgusting, stealing from a hospital. It's a really interesting way to clean money. You know, you don't think of it. You always think
about it. I felt like I was an Ozark.
Yeah, right, right. Like money laundering, I'd never thought of it in terms of giving it to a recruit's parent. But, I mean, that's, you know, so what happens in all this stuff is then basically kids who have nothing to do with this, who, like, go play football to program, get hit with punishment, you know? Why? What good does that do? And I understand people say, well, but it's the overall institutional control. It's the program. You got to deter this behavior. And, you know, what I want deterred is someone stealing from a hospital so that they should go to prison for it. That would be the preferred punishment here. A lot of these things that we worry about with NCAA, you know, NCAA investigations that are toothless anyway, you know, those are coming to an end soon. I cannot wait.
I can't either. And then more bad news in the SEC this week. Florida doesn't look like they're going to be able to open up until Monday with their facility. So they've already postponed that game. They were scheduled to play this Saturday against Missouri. That's 2 weeks in a row. Missouri's had their game postponed. They will then reschedule that game for next Saturday against Florida. So tough time to be a Missouri Tigers fan right now where you're not really having all that many problems on your team, but a couple teams in a row, Vanderbilt and Florida, have had to postpone games, two postponed games in a row for Florida, and hopefully they're able to play on Halloween against Missouri at this point because the outbreak still pretty significant there in Florida.
Yeah, gosh, Dan Mullen, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're Missouri, I wonder, are there going to be will there be some angry, like, Eric Ebron comments from Missouri? And
maybe.
People should be getting forfeits. But, yeah, that's too bad for them. That's one of those – it's like you have – everything's going fine for you, and you still can't play. And Big Ten starting up here, we're going to see, I think, quite a bit of that as that league gets going.
And we talked about, you know, Jeff Brohm earlier in the show with Dennis Kelly, who went to Purdue, and Purdue, obviously close to his heart. Jeff Brohm, the coach there, tested positive for COVID-19, and Purdue basically filling out a waiver trying to get clearance for Jeff Brohm to coach remotely on Saturday in their game. They're, like, trying to get him to be able to either coach or communicate with the staff remotely, and a lot of people not very happy about that.
Yeah, well, that's when we were asking that about Nick Saban. I mean, what that's the thing with that is, if there's not a rule, if there's not actually a written rule, then what's the problem?
Well, everybody keeps saying competitive advantage. And, I mean, I guess, like, you're not coaching on the sideline with, like, a computer or a TV broadcast on, but I don't know how much of a competitive advantage that gives you at that point.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't know. And maybe you're radioing in, like, hey, they said on the broadcast they're running Cover 3, and we hadn't seen that yet. And
right. Sometimes there's broadcast nuggets, I guess, about the other team, I guess. But, I mean, you guys are sitting in the coaching box tracking. You know, the coaches in the box, and a lot of times it's grads and stuff, they are charting every single route that is run because, you know, game plans are you're going to have the same play run multiple times in a game. I mean, all that information is so much deeper than anything the TV broadcast is talking about. You know, unless, like you said, maybe there's something the coach said to us in a meeting that you feel comfortable now talking about during the broadcast. I'm trying to think of what information that would be that would actually then be like, hey guys, let's do this. I just heard, you know, Herb Street say this. You know, I can't quite. I'm sure there's something I'm not thinking of, but nothing really comes to mind. I say let them sit at home and give them a direct feed and just give them a, you know, like a button, you know, like go or not go or whatever. You know?
Just see how that works.
Run pass.
Run or pass, yes. And hopefully it's not on like a 20-second delay where he's just, you know.
Yeah.
right, two downs behind.
That's why it's either direct feed or it's pretty worthless, right?
So we had Derek Mason on yesterday, Vanderbilt football coach, and obviously they've been going through the COVID outbreak of their own, had to postpone their game against Missouri, getting moved off to December the 12th. Got Ole Miss coming into town next week, and Joe, it sounds like that they are trending in the direction of being ready for that. Now, had they played this week, and they had a bye week originally scheduled for this week, so that's good timing there. Derek Mason said the other day, I don't know. Like, I don't know if we'd have been ready to play this week or not. Hopefully, they're in a better situation this time next week, and that game against Ole Miss can go on as scheduled.
Yeah, it seems like it will. There's optimism. The timeline kind of makes sense. Obviously, there's still always the chance of new issues and contact tracing. There's also some injuries, too. That's the thing. We don't know exactly who is on in what situation, but some of it is just straight up regular old football injuries with this time. Then they missed some real key guys, in that last game against South Carolina. They hung in for a half, and then it did not hang in the second half. But they should be constructed better to compete. And like Derek was saying yesterday, I mean, you try to take positives out of stuff like this. You have all this extra time to, like, vet your team that normally you just be game planning week to week, and you don't have that time to really self-scout. So maybe they'll come up with some things to, especially to help Ken Seals, who I think has shown some promise, but, he's got to get more help.
He does, and Vanderbilt at a bit of a disadvantage from that standpoint anyway. From the scholarship number, we've talked about 53 is the mark you got to hit. They're at, 70 anyway? So they're at a much lower number.
Yeah. Right. A lot of opt-outs, yeah.
A lot of opt-outs, a lot of things, a lot of different challenges going on with Vanderbilt. So hopefully they're able to heal up, get healthy enough to play in that game against Ole Miss next Saturday, which could be interesting. I mean, you never really know what you're going to get out of Ole Miss. You talk about bad defenses. Ole Miss, they have one of the worst defenses I have seen in recent memory in college football, especially at the SEC level. Like, their defense is bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vanderbilt can – yeah. And Vanderbilt – I mean, the best thing about Vanderbilt so far has been that, that offensive line, much discussed for what it doesn't have, has been good in run blocking. Their backs have been good. Keon Brooks, I thought, was really the bright spot of that South Carolina game. So I think Vanderbilt will be able to run the football against them, which if you're Vanderbilt, you don't want to – the other side of the ball, it's not a good matchup. It was a terrible matchup for Alabama. It's going to be a bad matchup for a lot of teams against that Ole Miss offense.
When we come back, the Big Ten getting underway this week in college football. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic will join us. We'll talk about that and much more on the college football landscape. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, talking some college football. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in friend of the show, Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. Nicole, how are you? What's going on?
I'm hanging in there. It is somehow at the same time in college football, I believe it's like week 8 and now also week 1. And
that's
also
right.
Maybe week negative 2 if we want to get really specific here.
It's a pretty crazy time, no question about it. And, Nicole, the Big Ten scheduled to begin play this weekend. It's been an interesting journey to get to this point, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes, especially with, no fans being in attendance, the stipulations in place even in order to play in the Big Ten. I guess what's your opinion of Big Ten football getting started this weekend in the college football landscape?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I'm excited. I think we all are. I think it's great that, they were able to figure out a way to get there from a testing standpoint, just by coming back in the fall. And really just, even with the Pac-12 and when we do this again in a couple of weeks and they have a shorter season and we all focus on that, this is about getting all back on the same calendar. And I think that is really just going to be so helpful, especially think about all those conversations we had about, like, oh, if you have a spring season, what does that mean for fall 2021, right? Like, we don't have to have those conversations anymore, and the Big Ten is putting itself in a position where it's champion. As long as it gets enough games in to really be in the same ballpark as the champions from the other leagues, it should have a chance to make the college football playoffs. So really obviously there's no bye week, there's going to be no fans, all that stuff's going to be weird. But really, like, the main things about getting back on the same calendar as everyone else, and again, putting your champion in a position where they should be able to have a shot at the playoffs. Like, those are two very, very big things, and the Big Ten's accomplished them.
All right, listen, I need you to help me, Nicole, on bye weeks.
Don't listen to him, Nicole. It's a ridiculous take he's about to throw it at you.
No, this is true.
Do you not call them bye weeks?
Yeah, the bye is something that's in a tournament. They are off or idle weeks. Can you join me in this,
Nicole,
please? We're trying to change the world here.
Nicole, we have literally looked this up in the dictionary. He is dead wrong. Don't let him talk to you about this.
No, here's the problem. That is technically our policy for writing as well, because for the same reason I'm not allowed to write bye weeks, but I can still say it on the radio. So I'm calling it a bye week.
That's
anyway.
Right.
Wait. So our policy at The Athletic is we can't write
you
bye?
You don't even know the policy?
No.
That's actually exciting.
It's idle week or off week.
All right. See, I feel even better about things. Okay. Well, good.
But I don't like that policy.
No.
Yeah, Joe, you should read your policy.
Yeah, you didn't even know the policy,
on
Joe.
Crusade about bye weeks, buddy.
Well, I actually even feel better because it is in the dictionary now, which is weird. But the dictionary, you know, they keep adding. I mean, what's the thing they just changed something? Oh, like less than, right? And fewer?
I don't know.
Come on. Like we are letting things erode.
Bad.
Yeah, we got to.
That was a bad one.
So this is my quest, but we'll press forward. On the Big Ten, Nicole, you just mentioned it. You know, there's a certain number. I don't know what it is. To me, it's like there's like three games a year anyway that matter to the playoff committee. So, like, if Ohio State comes out and just destroys the best teams they play and look like we think they will, I think they're probably fine. But, I mean, do you think we're going to – I mean, I look at the Big Ten standards, and I look at what's happened in the SEC now. I've got to think a lot of Big Ten games are going to be in jeopardy just because it's such a high standard of 5% of your roster or more, and then you can't play, right?
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of concerns about that, and I think it's reasonable. The standards are pretty strict. We also know that players, if they test positive, they're going to be out for a minimum of 21 days, which is a lot longer than everybody else. Because again, you think about how the Big Ten had to, you know, compromise to get to the point of returning. You know, there were 11 university presidents that were concerned about, you know, long-term health risks and issues that we don't know yet about. So they added that extra time to do more cardiac screening and to make sure that those athletes are, that it's safe for them to return to practice and competition. Imagine a star player testing positive, missing 21 days. That's a lot longer than we've seen players miss in the SEC, ACC, and the Big 12. So that's obviously also something to keep an eye on. But again, you're thinking, and this is the same thinking in the Pac-12, that with daily antigen testing, you're really cutting down on contact tracing, because if you're catching positives earlier, then it's not like you're, because so here's the thing, PCR tests, the gold standard, but what happens if you're only testing a couple days a week is you test positive, and then, okay, who have you been around for the last few days? Instead of with the daily antigen testing, okay, we found a positive, so it's a shorter period of time of people that you've been in close contact with. So it's, the idea is there's less people getting swept up in the net of a contact tracing, close contact, because you're identifying it sooner. So that is the flip side of that, where, you know, hopefully you're not going to be in a situation, and again, you wouldn't be able to play because of the positivity rate issues too. But let's say, remember Georgia Southern played a game where it was like 33 players are out and they're still playing. Like, you're not going to get in those situations where you're going to have like a dozen, 20 players caught up in contact tracing, or you shouldn't at least, because the point of daily testing is, okay, you're going to have positives, we'll catch them, but they're not going to turn into outbreaks.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Nicole, you've got a very interesting piece on The Athletic, basically detailing what it's like to try to salvage, I guess, some sort of home field advantage, whatever that looks like in today's world, and use the artificial crowd noise as well. What have you made of the way broadcast have used those crowd noises, and what's been your takeaway from teams and broadcasts on how that process has gone down in a strange college football season so far?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anything is really replicating a home field advantage, and talking with different announcers, including Joel Klatt, he said this a few times, like, they covered a fair amount of upsets on the road because you just don't have that energy, even with a smaller crowd, even when you have fans there. But I basically focused on essentially what we're going to see out of the Big Ten, because there's no fans allowed in any of those home stadiums. But really when there's none, and I think, you know, you have these ambient crowd noise background tracks. A lot of them are coming from Madden. And so, you know, a lot of times when you're watching a game on TV, that's what you're hearing, what they're piping in the stadium. And I think, you know, I think for the most part, you know, watching these games on TV, it feels pretty normal. And, you know, yeah, you may cut away, you might see cardboard cutouts or whatever, but, you know, I do think the idea is to get used to this new normal, to have some background noise. And the people I was talking to are the ones who, like, actually get to press the buttons to make it, like, okay, they had a big first down. It's like, ooh, like, press, like, you know, crowd swell loud, you know, like, make it a little bit louder. So that even for the players, even if it's not normal, it, you know, at least sounds a little bit like a game atmosphere. You know, but certainly I'm sure, and you know, Joe, I know you've covered some games in person. I mean, you know, it's a lot more like a scrimmage feel than it is a normal game, but they're trying everything. And I think, you know, with the Big Ten, we're going to see, you know, the same types of efforts and you know, efforts into hype videos and you know, Boston College was walking me through some of their messages from family members that they recorded before the season. They're also doing something with some screens in the tunnel where, like, I think it's basically Zoom where, like, the family members can see their sons and brothers, like, run out of the tunnel. Like, little things to try to, I don't know, just make it a better experience for the players themselves. And people are going to have to get creative because otherwise you're just kind of giving up, right? And you're just saying, like, okay, well, it's a wash. These all feel like scrimmages. Instead, you know, people are going to try to get creative to try to make it a better experience, even though they know it's not going to be anything like a regular game. And I think a lot of these efforts, you know, are happening even when it's like, you know, 10% of the stadium is full, 20% of the stadium. You're still thinking about noise. You're still thinking about, you know, making sure the fight song is queued up and things that normally happen. And even some of the marketing folks I talked to, you know, even those traditions like, you know, if you win a game and you go over to the student section, sing your alma mater, like some of these teams are still doing those things even in empty stadiums because, again, like, what else are you going to do, right? You've got to try to come up with something that makes it feel like a new normal.
Yeah, I hope the Big Ten button pushers are better than the Minnesota Vikings person who was, like, putting huge cheers at, like, punt fair catches. But, you know, trial and error a little bit there. Hey, Jeff Brohm, Nicole, so he's trying to – He has tested positive. He cannot coach Purdue's opener. He's trying to get clearance to have some sort of, you know, impact on the game. And I think this is something that's certainly going to be relevant to probably a lot of coaches before the season's over. I was certain that Nick Saban was going to have like a shock thing on Sarkisian if he, you know, like if he was going to like go for it on fourth down or something, you know, from his home. But where do you think this is going? Do you think we're going to see these coaches be allowed to have input during these games?
So, I mean, honestly, no. I think that these, you know, as much as it makes sense to all of us and we understand the frustration of these coaches, I mean, these technically were things that they looked at, the oversight committee, the rules committee, like people looked at this in the summer because if you think about it, we all knew and all of these coaching staff like had time to figure out, okay, who's going to be my designated, like, you know, acting head coach, like they went through all of those plans. So everyone knew this was going to happen, but the rules in place because, you know, competitive advantage, disadvantage, you know, if someone has technology and is, you know, kind of communicating with a sideline, what Jeff Brohm's asking for is like a phone call into the coach's box. If you're watching the game on TV, you know, there's a couple second delays anyway. So it's not really like you could call a play based on something he sees. So that's the thinking there. But again, I think, you know, even if you wanted to allow that, that would have already been the rule. Because these folks knew that this was going to happen. It's just kind of interesting because, again, I think it's like what you guys just said, like it's going to keep happening. But it's almost like these coaches, like, don't pay attention when another coach misses. And it's like, right. Me, it's like, wait, no, I need to be involved. Like, let me call something. Let me communicate with my coaches, have some control. So ultimately, I would be surprised if something like this passes, or like if they grant this waiver, or whatever the technical request is, the appeal. I don't know exactly what it is, but again, like I understand the sentiment, and these are coaches that love to have control over things, and they don't. But I do think if they were going to make some sort of exception and you know, kind of create some sort of system for head coaches that were unavailable, they would have already done that. So that's kind of why I would be surprised if you know, Jeff Brohm's able to even just call into the coach's box.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Nicole, appreciate you taking time to join us. Great stuff as always.
Yep, absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Nicole. Absolutely. And going to be interesting to see the Big Ten as they begin play this week. Like you said, Joe, the standard's very high in order to play a game this week. And we saw yesterday, I think in Michigan, the students basically got a stay-at-home order
at
the University of Michigan campus. Now, that's not necessarily going to affect the football team, but just kind of shows you the sign of the times and the struggles that potentially could be on the horizon for the Big Ten.
Yeah, they got a stay-at-home order for Nicole's alma mater, the University of Michigan. But, yeah that football team, that's probably the best game. Pretty looking forward to that game. They will carry on. They will go on to Minnesota, and it's Minnesota-Michigan. Pretty good little battle for the brown jug Saturday night.
So how excited are we for Big Ten football? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Can Ohio State do enough at this point in the season to secure their spot in the college football playoff? That's coming up next. But first, make sure you're tuning in to this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is the San Francisco 49ers taking on Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, talking some college football. The Big Ten back in action this weekend. So we are closer, Joe, to having a normal college football schedule, normal-ish college football schedule. Still the Pac-12 left to come back and play in the Power 5. But
whatever.
Cares about the Pac-12. They're not good. I guess maybe Oregon. I don't know.
I do like some Pac-12 after dark.
Do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, just because, like, on a Saturday, you know, you're used to whatever the primetime game is, and then it's, you know, and it's like, wait, I still have another, like, three quarters of a, you know, whatever.
Arizona,
UCLA, Oregon. I mean, I'll watch it.
Okay.
That's about what the Pac-12 is good for.
Falling asleep, too. Very good for the Pac-12. Yeah. Good for them.
More football is always good.
That is good. So you mentioned it with Nicole Auerbach in the last segment. The standards the Big Ten has tossed out there in order to play a football game. And it's basically like 5% of your team, if they've tested positive or are in contact tracing, whatever the case may be, you're not playing. And that is a very high standard, a standard that nobody else from a league perspective has around college football. How big of an issue do you anticipate this is going to be? Obviously, without having a crystal ball, as you look ahead to what the Big Ten season could look like.
Yeah, I mean, and like Nicole was pointing out there, the 21-day thing too. I mean,
I had forgotten about that.
That's Justin Fields, you know, and it's like, okay, so
there's 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's a minimum. You know, so that's a minimum of like two games that you'd be missing. It's going to be wild. For sure, in that league. I do think it'll come down to that kind of discussion. Let's just take an example of, you know, let's say that does happen. Like Justin Fields and a bunch of guys are missing and they lose a game, you know, and then they end up playing like five or six games total as a team. But like when they have everyone, you know, they destroy, you know, Michigan and Penn State. Every year in that committee room, there's always something interesting and controversial and difficult for them. And this year could be just insane because you have to take that stuff into account. But, I mean, I know a lot of people around here are going to be like, why could they even be? I mean, they weren't even going to play. And they're just starting now. They should be just eliminated out of hand, which I don't agree with. But I will understand frustration if they take a spot from, like, an SEC team, you know, that had a different kind of challenge and played a full 10 games against that kind of competition.
Yeah, and the good thing you've got going for you from that perspective is the Big 12 sucks. So, like, the Big 12 is bad. Right. Oklahoma's already pretty much out of it at this point. Texas as well. So it'd be one thing if, like, you had, you know, an undefeated Oklahoma team. Clemson's going to go undefeated. They're going to get in the college football playoff. And then, you know, Georgia goes undefeated the rest of the year and they sneak up and beat Alabama in the SEC title game. And there you've got Alabama with one loss and Georgia with one loss. That's when the conversation could get pretty interesting with Ohio State
in the Big Ten if they played like five games
right.
or something like that. I think with the Big 12 being as bad as it's been, it actually kind of helps this conversation in terms of, you know, if Ohio State goes 5-0, whatever the case may be, 6-0, and they look dominant while doing so, with how bad the Big 12 is, you could probably still get two SEC teams in there.
Yeah, that's true. Now, so, well, I just dismissed the Pac-12, but let's say Oregon goes undefeated.
Yeah.
You know, that's where,
problem.
I mean, frankly, I'm rooting for chaos, so so that sounds good to me. But
the problem that any team in the Pac, like Oregon, I think is probably the best team in the Pac-12, the problem they're going to have is their quality of competition is just not good.
Right, like, but, yeah, I don't disagree, but the problem is with this is, well, how do you prove it? Like, they're going to say, what do you mean? Well, it's not, you know, we didn't get to play the other leagues. We would have kicked their butt. What are you talking about? I mean, if a league can rise and fall and can be really good one year and really bad one year, why can't it immediately be really good the next year?
I mean, but I think this is where perception matters with the College Football Playoff Committee as well. Like, I mean, just right or wrong, I think it's right, but right or wrong, the SEC is perceived much differently than the Pac-12 is.
So it is.
If you got 2 1-loss teams in there, you're probably getting the edge at that point. Just my guess. Maybe not, but
I think
my
you're
guess.
Probably right. I do think it would be interesting in the I would understand, too, like if you're Oregon and you're an Oregon fan, it's like we want every game in front of us. How could you possibly not include us, you know? And, yeah, I think you're right, though. The Big 12, that helps because I don't expect anyone to have any kind of case at all in that league now. They've battered each other, and it's just not good. I mean, it's amazing. Just a league, I still don't quite understand it. I know people have tried to look into this and figure it out. Like, how can a league as a collective not know how to play any defense at all?
It's crazy.
I mean, Oklahoma and Texas have 5 4-star kids all over their defenses and guys who go in the NFL, and yet when they play in Big 12 games, it's like they have never tried to tackle someone before. It's bizarre.
I don't understand it. Now, so far, that's been a college football thing as a whole. There hasn't been a whole lot of defense being played in the SEC either.
That's true.
But, I mean, the Big 12 takes it to a different level. I mean, that Oklahoma game where they lost to Iowa State, the tackling, I couldn't believe it. Like, they could not tackle anyone in that game. It's not like Iowa State's out there, you know, just trotting out these 5-star recruits everywhere that you just can't stop.
Right.
They just couldn't tackle anybody.
Yeah. Now, I mean, like, Matt Campbell's a good coach. He's going to, at some point, probably get a primo job out of there. He's done a really good job. But, yeah, they're not – this is not like a bunch of future NFL guys running around. But, yeah, it looks bad. So – Big 12 is helping out in that. Big 10 is going to be really interesting, and it's also the Heisman race too. That's an interesting thing here because, I mean, right now, is it Trevor Lawrence and everyone else?
Yeah,
probably.
I mean, I can make a pretty fascinating case for Jalen Waddle too.
Yeah, I love
it's
that.
It's a quarterback-driven award lately.
No, I love the case for Jalen Waddle. I mean, if he has just insane numbers, that's what it would take, you know?
And even Devontae Smith. But that's kind of
that's
conversation
the hard part.
Of, you know, Tannehill, Henry. You kind of take away from each other at that point.
But Justin Fields, I think, enters the chat room, right? As soon as they
– Yeah.
By the way, they come right out and I love that it's Nebraska. I love it. Hey, Nebraska. Oh, you mad? Okay. Yeah, go to – now I know it's like go to Ohio Stadium and – normally one of the great environments, and it's again, like we just talked about with the call, it's going to be great PA sound system environment.
Yes.
But still, it's Ohio State. So good luck dealing with those guys. That's a loaded football team, the Ohio State Buckeyes, as usual. But I think Justin Fields is a guy who enters the Heisman race. What if he plays 4 games? What if he plays 4 games and he, you know, throws for 1,600 yards and 16 touchdowns? You know, but Trevor Lawrence plays a full season. Stuff like this, that hopefully this is the only year we'll have to deal with discussions like this.
I'm hoping so. Sticking with the Big Ten, it's an interesting year to me for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh because he's been the guy that everybody's been waiting to take the next step and bring Michigan back to a point where it's in the conversation for the national title. And he hadn't gotten to that point yet. Now, he's done a good job. I think sometimes people overrate like this, they just call it like a massive failure that he's been there and he hadn't gotten them back to the college football playoff yet or anything like that. I think he's a good coach. I think he's done a good job. I do think he's overrated, but that's fine. It is what it is. How important of a season is this for Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan program?
Yeah, it's really big. I mean, at some point, he's got to beat Ohio State. I agree. He's done a good job. He's a good coach. The thing with Harbaugh is that when he came in, I know a lot of people who cover college football. I couldn't believe. I'll call out my buddy Dan Wolkin, like, national title in 3 years. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of that stuff. And I'm like, well, why do you think that? I mean, I know he's a good coach, but based on what? I mean, he did a really good job in the NFL. He did a good job at Stanford. Andrew Luck. It's good to have Andrew Luck. That's what he needs, is a great quarterback. Maybe this Joe Milton will be the guy. I mean, he, you know, McCaffrey was supposed to be the star there, and he transferred because Joe Milton has taken over the job. So you got to have that transcendent quarterback. But I agree, he's done a good job. I mean, Michigan hasn't won a Big Ten championship since 2004. There's a little bit of Tennessee with Michigan.
Yeah,
like they have all the you know, advantages in terms of fan base, resources, all that stuff. But there's a little bit of inflation of like what they've done. And sort of there's a lot of like overhyped teams that don't live up to the hype. And so that's part of the thing with Michigan too. But yeah, this is a big year for Harbaugh. But I mean, is he going to beat Ohio State with that team? I
probably not.
You know, if all things are equal and they both have all their best players, yeah, probably not. It's just hard. Right now he's in this league. That's a longtime great rivalry. It's just lopsided. Ohio State it's Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. And then, like, everybody else. And Michigan's part of everybody else now.
I don't know if you've heard, Joe, but there is an interesting event taking place tonight at Belmont. Rumor has it.
I have heard about that.
Yeah, rumor has it. We're going to have Belmont Athletic Director Scott Corley join us next here on the show. This is Robbie and Rexro live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.